For most of this century, there has been a single story about global food security, that food insecurity existed outside U.S. borders, in low and middle-income countries. And in these countries, food producers themselves were the most food insecure of anyone. This single story lent itself to a simple policy solution: increasing agricultural production in developing countries. It is still incredibly important to do this, but not only this. As demographics change, as geopolitics shift, as the world wrestles with the COVID pandemic, and as climate change causes temperature and weather extremes worldwide, today's food insecurity requires new solutions. Have policymakers kept up, or are they relying on yesterday's answers? Welcome to the Reset the Table podcast, where we'll make room at the table for fresh ideas for solving food insecurity around the world and right here at home. I'm turning over the mic to the CSIS Global Food Security Program for today's episode.
Hello and welcome, everybody. I'm Kimberly Flowers, and we're so glad that you are listening in today. We have such a special guest. We have Dr. Agnes Kilabata, who most of you, if you are in food security, know that name, but she is right now holding the title of the United Nations Secretary General Special Envoy to the 2021 Food System Summit. And that is what we are going to dive into very quickly. I'll call you Agnes. Sometimes I'll try to call you Dr. Kilabata, but forgive me, I sometimes can be informal. But Agnes, I remember meeting you, I think the first time, it was 2015, when you spoke at the CSIS Global Development Forum, and you have done so many things since then, and this is such a big job. So I'm just curious from a personal side, why you decided to tackle such a huge job and such a huge event and historical event that it was. So how did you feel about taking on this new role?
Kimberly, good to see you, and really thank you so much for hosting me. It's been a while. And now to the very question you're asking, why did I decide to take on this job? The last time I saw you, that's before COVID hit. As a people, we've been exposed to one of the worst challenges of our times. But it is a challenge that was happening on top of another challenge, the challenge of climate change. In the world of producing food, in the world of ending hunger, in the world of getting agricultural systems to perform, which is what I do for a living, and where we work with smallholder farmers, this part of work was being challenged and is being challenged by climate change. And I feel like we had started making gains, very strong gains, with regards to figuring out and helping farmers figure out how to increase their yields, figuring out how they could finally get themselves out of poverty. With the climate change, that is all being taken away. And every two seasons, one season is a failed season for these farmers. Of course, on top of that, with COVID-19, our economies in many of the developing countries extremely challenged. And that ability, any extra ability that smallholder farmers and farming communities we are getting, is also being taken away. So there's so much that is at stake that we really need to engage around. So it's really important that the rest of the world understands that things we do in very far removed places impact farmers, impact communities, impact poverty and entrenched poverty in some places that they don't even know about. So for me, this is about justice from a climate change perspective and ensuring that these smallholder farmers can get their lives back.
And do you feel like the summit will be successful in doing that? I mean, this summit, hundreds of commitments, 50,000 people were watching, so many people engaged over such a long period of time. But how do we measure success? Like, how do you say it was a success or not? How are we going to say it's going to help that smallholder farmer?
There are so many ways of looking at how the summit could be labeled as successful or not successful. But let's focus on the successful part, which is what you're asking me. We started out with hundreds and hundreds of views around food systems. There are so many ways of looking at how food systems work. And these divergent views are what makes it so complicated. So to be able to move food systems in ways that actually start helping us focus on moving forward together, on having a shared understanding of what the challenges are and how we are each impacting these challenges, extremely important.
How do we determine this is a success?
The success of the summit is really around wrapping our minds around the complexity of food systems, right? And so many divergent views and so many passions around food systems. For so many people, food is culture. For so many people, food is ending hunger. For so many people, food is about health diets. for so many people, food is impacting our environment in ways that are not acceptable. And for so many people, food is our economies. It's what gives me a livelihood to be able to do the things I care about in my life. So being able to bring all those views, all those interests together and agree that we actually don't need to look at food as an ending hunger. We need to look at food as a complex issue that brings us all together. We've been able to do that in this food system summit. We've been able to bring all these views together to agree that our food systems need to transition from what I would call, in many ways, providing suboptimal services, but could be much more optimized, could do so much more. But also we need to be aware of how they're impacting other things around us, the environment, the biodiversity. So if we can come together and think about that every time I'm eating, this has cost so much or this has impacted so much. And that's what we try to do in this Food System Summit, bring that thinking together. So that's number one, really moving the discourse around the fact that food costs us so much. It's of so much value to us, but we can't just be very simplistic about it. We've managed to converge the conversation and get people going on looking at food as a system. That being said, we were also able to mobilize national governments to start thinking about how you bring different sectors together. How do you bring different ministries, different sectors to talk about food as a system that they all need to engage around, food as an investment that they all need to move around together. We feel like through national dialogues, that conversation has happened. But then we also do understand that food is about so many stakeholders. There are many in producers, there are many fishers, there are many businesses, retailers that are involved in food. Being able to bring all of them together again to have a conversation that recognizes the benefits, the beauty, but also the challenges of food is something we did very well. So I feel like we've been able to force and pull this conversation together in ways that everybody feels that they've been engaged, in ways that makes people feel that they can do something about our current situation, and in ways that makes people feel like they actually can contribute individually and collectively, that they can contribute, they can take action. If you look at it from that perspective, then I feel that we've been pretty successful in getting the convergence we are looking for and in really helping people understand that we have it in ourselves to take action.
I'm going to push back a little because, of course, some people would say that you included too many people, including the corporate colonizations or the big agribusinesses, right? Because you were so inclusive, some of those folks didn't want everyone to be at the table. What do you say to those that boycotted or had feelings that there was too focused on technology? What are your comments to those?
First of all, I think those are two separate issues. Technology is an extremely important part of where we are going. Technology has evolved significantly and has made life so much easier and is improving every day. Yesterday's bad technology has gone into today's very good technology. So it's improving every day. And it's one of the things, in fact, we put innovation as one of the key pillars to ensuring that we come through an implementation, staying on top of, you know, how quickly we adopt technology that is coming on board and how well we use it. So I don't want technology to be seen as the enemy. I actually would like us to look at it as something to harness and move forward faster. But that's one part. The other part is then corporate and corporate engagement. The food sector, the food value chains, significantly run and managed by corporate businesses. Do we have a discomfort around that? Do we feel like that has created certain inequities in our system and all that? Yes. You know, there's no question about the fact that we could do better. Do corporates themselves feel like we could do better? Yes, they definitely feel like we could do better. In fact, in their declaration, one of the things they are committing to is a living wage. And one of the things I would love to hold them accountable to is ensuring a living wage for people working in their value chains. Shouldn't we have them around the table to ask them these questions? I believe we must have them around the table to ask them these questions. I don't think the answer to resolving some of the challenges we've lived with in our food systems is shutting people out, telling them you're the evil of the world. No. We need to have a conversation around the things that we need to improve. And here we said, yes, we may have challenges of trust around whether you actually are in this to benefit all of us or to benefit you. Those challenges of trust, we need to talk about them and we need to open up our conversations and challenge each other. What are you doing right? What are you doing wrong? And where could you do better? Because they are part of this industry and they're going to be a part of this industry for a very long time. So I don't think the point of locking anybody out, corporate or non-corporate, producers or not producers, I don't think there's any value in not listening to anybody. Actually, one of the things I learned from the food system is just how polarized human beings can get around issues that are common to all of us. When did we become so intolerant of listening to each other?
So it's not just America? It's not just our politics? You mean this happens in other places in the world?
Well, I say it in the food system, and I'm like, I've never thought that there's a place where not listening to each other, not hearing each other, becomes the way we solve problems. The way we solve problems is listening, we agree to disagree, or we agree to move forward. Here, we have a way of moving forward by looking at what is good for all of us. And I feel like corporates, SMEs, businesses, all these people are coming around the table trying to genuinely find a solution because they all understand that this is a one-in-a-lifetime chance to actually find a solution to something we all care about. And it was not my job to lock them out. It was actually my job to make everybody feel that the table is open to all of us to have those conversations so that when we move forward, we actually agree that this is the best way to move forward for all of us.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that phrase food systems, right? Because you've been in this space for, well, your whole life, really, not just even career, your life. But especially as a research scientist, I'm curious, what evidence do you sort of look to explain why that word food systems, that phrase food systems is so important? Because I feel like, well, haven't we always been working on food systems? Why is this suddenly the new catchphrase? What's different? So I guess two questions I'm asking. One, really what's different with food systems that we're really looking at things in a way that maybe we hadn't before? And then also, what sort of research or evidence shows us that that's the best way to tackle these big complex problems that we're talking about?
First of all, I think that if we were not looking at food as a system, it was a mistake in the first place. Because actually, food spans a whole lot of things, all the way from production and how it is produced to processing to when it makes it to the table and even how it is wasted. So there's a whole perspective around food. There's a whole, you might call it, different subsystems that we need to be looking at if we are going to have a good view of how food and the place food holds in our lives, what it is contributing and what it's taking away. So there's no way you can have a good sense of what it is contributing and what it is taking away if you don't look at it as a system. If you look at it as a system, you will understand that to produce food, you need water, you need environment, I mean, you need soil. There are sacrifices, that there are trade-offs in the environment. They haven't been that great, but today are things we cannot ignore anymore because they are becoming huge in terms of the cost of producing food. But also so does every other thing that we do along the way. There are give and takes along the way. For you to be able to have visibility of that whole perspective, you really have to look at food as a system. That's when you do understand that a significant percent of the food we produce is wasted, equivalent to $1 trillion. Because if you look at it just from a production perspective, I shipped my food away, all the food is gone. But actually, two-thirds gets wasted down the road somewhere, you know, at the retail level or at the consumption level at someone's table. So the food system gave us the opportunity to look at the investments in food along the way, but also the things that we are dropping, and yet they have significant impact in how we work as a complex system around food. So that has become clear.
And you think that wasn't happening before? I mean, you think that really we weren't looking at the whole system? I say we, I mean globally.
I mean, just from my own perspective, to be honest with you, if you ask me, I'll say I care about ending hunger, right? But when you look at it from a system perspective, just to give you an example, the amount of food we produce every year to feed people in Africa is equivalent to the amount of food that is wasted in Europe every year, right? But again, I'm not looking at Europe, I'm not looking at the US, I'm looking at how I produce food. If we look at it from a system perspective, then the system part starts to impact all of us. And yes, we were not looking at it as a system. You're looking at it as trade. We are looking at it as producing. Environmental people are saying, oh, we need to minimize impact on the environment. And they forget that 30% of that impact is coming from food systems, except they are not talking to us in the food area. You know, this food system thing allows us to have conversations with the right people in the right places and to ensure that the conversations are adding up rather than being different silos in different places.
Before we wrap up, I have to talk about U.S. leadership. I want to talk about all the commitments, and there's not time. But since this is for, you know, a D.C.-based think tank that focuses a lot on U.S. policy and leadership, what did you think of the Biden-Harris administration's commitments? And do you think that they were, I would say, status quo, or are they really sort of groundbreaking? And for listeners that don't know, in his U.N. address, President Biden pledged $10 billion in multi-year initiatives on food security and nutrition.
And at a time when nearly one in three people globally do not have access to adequate food just last year, the United States is committing to rallying our partners to address immediate malnutrition and to ensure that we can sustainably feed the world for the decades to come. To that end, the United States is making a $10 billion commitment to end hunger and invest in food systems at home and abroad.
What are your thoughts on U.S. leadership in this space and at the summit?
First of all, stepping forward and providing leadership at that level, you know, recognizing that we need to start leading for food systems is extremely important. We've been trying to get everybody to come along. We've been trying to get everybody to agree. So having a few leaders step forward and say, yes, we do recognize this as important. We are putting our best foot forward. That was really important. And I just wanted to put that on record and say we really appreciate that leadership. So that was number one. Number two, there was something he said that is probably a lot of people missed, but is extremely important. He said improving food systems here at home and strengthening food systems abroad, right? The way we've been working, you have domestic affairs and domestic engagement, and you would talk about those really separate from international engagements. Here in the same breath, we are talking about the engagement around food systems, recognizing that engaging on food systems at home is as critical as engaging on food systems abroad. Yes, sometimes the challenges are going to be different, but food systems is not a problem of any particular part of the world. It's a problem of all of us. And you can't commit to food systems internally and not recognize that there's an international perspective to this if you're a leading country in that area. But neither can you commit to external engagement on food systems and don't recognize that internally you do have a problem to address as well. So it gives me hope because I see that there's a commitment there to dealing with production challenges. The impact of food systems on environment, I'm sure, are going to be addressed from that talking about domestic engagement. The challenges of food systems on hunger in countries where it needs to be addressed are going to be addressed. So that global perspective that recognizes that form of leadership was extremely important for me coming from the U.S. government. When President Biden said half the resources he's putting on the table will be to deal with domestic challenges around food systems and half the resources will be used to deal with challenges of food systems abroad, I thought that was great leadership from a food systems perspective, recognizing that the challenge of dealing with food systems is no longer about dealing with hunger out there in countries that are struggling with hunger. It's also about recognizing that internally, from a domestic perspective, some of those challenges exist and they need to be addressed. So being able to look that in the face and talk about it from a food systems perspective in one breath is really important. It's what we're hoping for, that we start looking at food systems as a global challenge that brings domestic and international challenges together and that we get to handle together. So I thought that was great leadership coming from the Biden administration.
We only have time for one more question. And I just want to say, looking ahead, if everyone is successful in staying true to the many, many commitments that were made at the national level, the local level, all the levels, because it was so inclusive, do you envision, we'll say 20 years from now, how would things look differently to the average consumer if all of these systems changes were in progress and happening well? What would look different in our daily lives?
So one of the things that I find a little bit depressing in our daily lives is that getting a decent and nutritious meal is not necessarily something that a lot of people have access to, right? That actually a majority of people, that half of our world is living with some form of dietary-related diseases because they are not eating well. From an individual perspective, I would hope that businesses are putting healthier food on the shelf so people are exposed to healthier food. I would hope that living incomes are increasing because governments and all these institutions that are responsible for that do recognize that our current poverty lines are too low to provide a decent food for a family. the way we do business, our expectations of food and our environmental impact are just not adding up. That we need a cleaner, healthier environment, and we could reduce the impact on our environment by reducing our expectations on food. So I think there's an opportunity to really ensure that an individual feels that they're in a safer world in 20 years by ensuring that they have access to better health from a food perspective, but also better health from an air perspective, an environmental perspective. There's a whole good sense around us when you feel like you're breathing in health, good air. And that's the thing about food and environment. You need both. You need great air to live well, and you need good food to live well. And we can help both. We can help by ensuring a good living wage, a healthy living income, decent work for people, and we can help it by ensuring that our food systems are not impacting our environment in ways that are generating negative impacts in our environment and making it difficult for us to find a good livelihood.
Thank you so much, Dr. Agnes Kilabata, for taking time to speak with us about the summit and about your thoughts around food systems and food systems transformation. I know how busy you are, and I know what a treat it is to be able to have your time to do this. I also just want to thank you for your leadership. You took on a big role, and it looks like that it was quite successful. I wish you luck and others for as you track the progress of those commitments, and I hope that we can all keep them accountable for the commitments that they made.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to everyone for listening. Have a wonderful day. Tune in next time to the next podcast for Reset the Table. Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of Reset the Table. You can subscribe on Apple or Spotify and follow us on Twitter at CSIS Food. Until next time.